Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Now back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted this year's Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Huh? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. 800-531-3815. Toll-free coast-to-coast. And my website is www.jbsba.com. When you get there, don't forget to subscribe to my newsletter. Become one of over 10,000 people who are happy subscribers. And the article this week is called Professional Vitamin C. That's what the article is about. So check that out when you get a chance. And don't forget to, it's easy to do, by the way. Just go to jbsba.com and click on the newsletter subscription link. Bill Brand is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. William Brand is the founder of a company called Development Specialists, which is a financial consulting and management firm. Offices all over the country and halfway around the world. Provides consulting and management services to companies that may be getting into a little bit of trouble. And that's the kind of guy we like to talk to, because we want to know what it's going to look like. What it looks like when things start getting bad, and that way we know when to try to get ourselves out of these problems. And Bill helps us with that. Bill Brandt, welcome back to the show.
Well, good morning, Jim. Glad to be here as always.
It's good to have you back. And Bill, I know one of the things you've been focusing on lately is an area that's something that's been in a law for a little over a year now. And we've talked a little bit about this on the show before. I think you and I may have covered it a little bit, and we've talked with some other folks, but I want to get your update on the effects of the Sarbanes-Oxley bill, especially on small business.
You know, it's funny. A lot of people assume that Sarbanes-Oxley is aimed at large public companies, or at least companies that trade on exchanges. And to be sure, Jim, that's where it's aimed. But like all laws that perhaps get rushed through, as you and I were speaking just before the program, without a great deal of forethought, it's going to have widespread impact on small business. And many of the things that are mandated to be done by big business with respect to compliance issues will be picked up and adopted by a variety of people and used in the context of small business.
Bill, before we go any further, let's help the audience understand what Sarbanes-Oxley is all about.
Sarbanes-Oxley was the government's quick response, the Congress's quick response to the corporate scandals of last year. A lot of people thought in 2002, a lot of political-type people thought, that the voters were going to go in the booth in November and they were going to vote corporate malfeasance. They were going to be angry about what had happened in Enron and WorldCom and all of these other cases, HealthSouth and the others. And the politicians were mortified that they'd be held accountable for this sort of spate of corporate evil doing. Instead, of course, issues of Iraq and other things took the fore at that point. And by the time we got to November, it was way down the list of things that people were worried about. Nevertheless, during the months, just as you're right, about this time last year, July and August, it got through the House fairly quickly and passed the Congress, or passed the Senate, I should say, if I recall, 97-0.
Yeah.
The last time
something went through Congress that quickly was 1892 when I think it was President Grover Cleveland got the Labor Day Act passed in 6 days. I think that was the last time anything went through that fast.
Well, I know you were around then. I wasn't.
I was there. Yeah, I was lobbying against it in those days.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I'll defer to a greater memory. I will tell you that as we both suggested just before the program began, anything that gets through Congress that quickly without a great deal of forethought is probably loaded with all kinds of consequences that are unforeseen, at least initially, and will come back to bite us exactly in lower portions of the anatomy where we can least afford it.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, Sarbanes-Oxley, among other things, mandates that corporate officers, specifically CEOs and CFOs, attest under oath to the efficacy of their numbers when they make their quarterly filings, that the preponderance of board members on many of the public boards now has to have an independent majority. That is, if there are five inside directors, there should be six outside directors, or non-executive directors, as the English call them. And there are a host of other issues dealing with reporting functions, corporate loans, and other issues that really run the gamut over some of the issues that Congress thought was appalling in terms of the public behavior that had occurred in the year or two prior, at the end of the basic bubble.
Right.
Well, some of the concerns I have, Jim, are the issues of the oaths under perjury and how they're going to affect small business, the loans and the prohibition against them and how they're going to affect small business, and other issues, which actually the folks at the small business level haven't really focused on yet.
Well, it's because it hasn't trickled down to us. At least if it has, we haven't really, it hasn't popped up on our radar screen yet. And what we're going to do, we're going to take a break in just a few seconds, and when we come back, folks, we're going to get Bill to explain to us how this thing that looks like a big business law to really focus on around 15,000 publicly held companies is actually going to trickle down and will impact us either directly or indirectly and cost us money or possibly even wreak havoc with us. And that's coming up right after these messages. It's 20 till. Bill Brandt is our guest. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me tell you about our show coming up straight ahead. Jack Harbour is going to join us, and we're going to talk about salesmanship. And after Jack, we'll have Grace Marie Turner, who's our healthcare expert. She's going to be bringing us up to date on what's going on in the area of healthcare public policy, and heaven knows we need help with that because small business owners are really taking it on the chin these days with our healthcare coverage. Jordan Goodman is going to help us to avoid the lies that we get told sometimes. That comes out of Wall Street. He's going to help us avoid some of those. And then Jay Fiore is with eBay, and he's going to join us and talk to us about virtual marketplaces. Very interesting topic that I'm very much interested in, and interested in making sure that all small business owners know about that option. That's one of the options of doing business in the marketplace. Bill Brandt is our guest. He's the president, the founder of Development Specialists Incorporated. And Bill, you want to give us a website, please?
Sure. It's dsi.biz, B-I-Z.
DSI.biz, and tell us what we'll find when we get there. You got a lot of articles there, don't you?
We have a lot of articles. It's a brand new website. They've changed it in the last 4 or 5 months to update it. It's got staff biographies, lists of backgrounds of cases we've done, articles, a whole number of things to choose from.
And folks, you may have seen some of Bill's bylines on our website, because we go and get some things that we think really pertain to what you guys would be interested in, small business owners would be interested in, and Bill shares those with us. And Bill, we appreciate that.
Don't you and I have a joint link to the Ted Kennedy fan club?
No. Well, I think maybe you have a link to the Ted Kennedy fan club. I have a.
Yours is not Britney Spears.
No, not her either. I consider Ted Kennedy to be the arch enemy of small business, and the thing is I've been saying that for a long time, and every year he reinforces that with something.
I'll have to talk to him about that.
We'll have to, yeah.
I haven't seen that from your perspective, and I find that interesting.
I actually am not just mad at him. I mean, from the standpoint of the fact that, you know, that he's just because he's whatever, but what I'm basing it on is just his behavior. And we'll have to talk about that another time.
Yeah,
we'll have
to
get back into that. Let's get back into the Sarbanes-Oxley thing. Bill, I wanted to make one comment about this. I wrote a short piece about Sarbanes-Oxley, Bill, about a year ago in my weekly letter, and what I one of the things I pointed out there was that there are approximately 15,000 publicly held companies in America, and if you identified all of the companies that were the ones that everybody knew about, and I even rounded it up to as many as 12. There actually weren't 12, but I said, okay, let's make it 12. Let's just say that there's at least that many. Some people will pop up on the radar screen after this, and you do the math on that. That meant that 8/10,000 of all publicly held companies out there had been found to have committed some egregious fraud, like WorldCom and Tyco and some of those guys. Vivendi, I guess it was, and some of those guys. Adelphia, right? Adelphia was the other one.
Adelphia, right.
Anyway, so what we've got is we've got this broad, sweeping Sarbanes-Oxley bill.
But you know where we come back to, Jim, is your high school economics teacher and my high school economics teacher, and indeed many of your small business listeners understand that the economy is based on confidence. And what really shook the folks in Washington, perhaps overly so, I will grant you, and I think we both take that point, was what these, if you will, black marks in corporate governance did to the confidence of the markets. particularly the time when the bubble was beginning to burst and people were beginning to wonder whether Wall Street was a straight deal and whether that the whole stock market wasn't, if you will, something that took in rubes on behalf of smart people in New York. And so a lot of this was aimed at restoring investor confidence, and perhaps overly so. But there are four broad areas under the context of confidence that affect, if you will, small business and all businesses. And they're basically reporting, self-dealing, corporate governance, and prosecution. Mm-hmm. And you can take the raft of other things that truly do apply to the 15,000 large NYSE companies or NASDAQ companies and not worry about them. But you're looking at a bunch of laws that were passed where bankers and others who do on a daily basis interact with small business are saying, if these kind of corporate mandates of behavior are good enough for IBM, they are certainly standards of behavior by which I can at least review and adjudge how my small business people are operating. What I've already begun to see happening is, loan statements, quarterly financial information, and other things often supplied to a banker. They are now asking for the CFO and CEO on a minimal basis to certify under perjury that it's true.
Even in these small businesses.
It never hurts if you're a banker. And I mean this not to speak ill of bankers, but it never hurts to have a memo in the file signed under oath by the CFO or the...
They can't get enough of that, can they?
Right. Because at some point when they decide, it's not going to be me who takes the blame, guess who they're going to point to, and mm-hmm. what they're going to have is one more straw, if you will.
It's the same mentality. It's the same emotion for them. It's the same CYA for them that causes them to get all the collateral that they can get.
It is the same CYA. And it's, you remember that there's a, one of the things that I'm sure many of your listeners notice about bankers is that there is a steady stream of them through their life. The sad fact is there aren't a lot of lenders who focus on small business exclusively. And when they bring in new bankers and train them, often they are first assigned to the smallest of the accounts,
yep.
Precisely those that actually need the most brain power and entrepreneurial kind of gift.
And wisdom, which typically you don't find a lot of in a 24-year-old banker.
I've heard that. And these fellows and ladies then move up the chain, and as they do, of course, for the next incoming person to deal with the loan, they leave a memo on the loan file, fully documented with their thoughts, which, of course, the borrower never sees.
Mm-hmm.
Now that loan file is going to contain, precisely for the CYA issues you raise, a series of documents signed by the president and others attesting to the efficacy of the numbers.
When we come back, I want to talk about what's the difference in what you're saying and what we've always had to require, what's been required of us when we submit our financial statements. We've always had that, but there may be an extra level of import here that I won't be able to explain to us when we come back right after these messages. It's Pinto. We're back at 7:00. Bill Brand is our guest. He's our good friend and longtime member of our Brain Trust. His company is called Development Specialists Incorporated, and it's DSI.biz, is that right?
It is.
Check that out when you get a chance, folks. Okay, Bill, let's talk about the difference between what we've always signed. When I give my financial statement to my banker, my personal and my corporate financial statement, I have to sign it at the bottom mm-hmm. under threat of perjury.
Right.
It's always been that way.
But I'm not talking about those, Jim.
I know, but what I'm saying is that is the language that most small business owners are now familiar with. Tell us what's different.
And I think, frankly, that most of us don't care about signing things under penalty of perjury. I don't mean to say that lightly, but
right.
In addition to the financial statements you've talked about, we all sign our tax returns that way every April. Last time, my kid's fifth-grade report card came home to me, and I think I had to sign it that I saw it under penalty of perjury for the teacher. that's not a big deal anymore. But I think it's the level of attestment that's now required. What's going to happen is I think that the numbers that maybe you routinely provide the banker, not your personal financial statement, but your business's operating numbers, which from time to time they want to see, may now be signed under oath. Just one more belt and suspenders that the bankers are going to want to see. The same with collateral borrowing based certificates for those of your listeners who are on asset based loans. Those
mm-hmm.
are probably going to require more and more signatures and be
more
attested to.
Even more covenants than before.
Well, not so much more covenants, but just attesting under oath that the covenants haven't been broken. Which
adds another blink level. I mean,
it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not that you weren't going to tell the truth. But now you're saying, you know, beyond anybody's shadow of a doubt.
Well, what you're doing, of course, is you're shifting the blame for anything that goes wrong, from any interpretation standard by the bank to utterly you're the bad guy and there's no excuse for it.
And see, this is, and even though small business owners, you know, the intention is to tell the truth, the intention is to do the right thing, we all know that sometimes things get reported that we thought were right that weren't right, that aren't right.
And that's the second issue, I think, that we talk about, corporate governance. We're not going to go out and recruit a bunch of directors for our businesses, obviously, at least, you know, high-profile, highly paid guys. But I think that one of the things you're going to see is the idea that every business could use a different perspective from the outside is not a bad idea. And I think you'll see some of the banks gently pushing and some of the other lenders gently pushing some of your listeners to go get a good mentor, and that's probably a better word than a director.
Right.
Take a look at some of these things and provide them at least a secondary, sort of more objective look, and that's never a bad thing, especially an objective look from the outside.
Bill, this may be a trick question, okay?
Uh-huh.
I just want to give you that warning. So basically, do I understand that you prefer that we not have had Sarbanes-Oxley?
Yes.
Okay. But am I incorrect in saying that this was that one of the big proponents of Sarbanes-Oxley was Ted Kennedy?
He was actually not.
I warned you. You can say I warned you.
He was actually not.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, the two people for whom it's named, Paul Sarbanes from Maryland and Oxley, that is
right.
Both a Republican and a Democrat.
I understand.
And you know, the truth is, Jim, when it passes...
I didn't say he was the lead author.
He actually wasn't. I think when it passes 97-0, I think what you're seeing is that famous political phrase, that if there's, you know, if you're being run out of town, get in front and make it look like a parade. I think they all thought that people were going to vote in November and wonder what was Congress doing to protect their, you know, 401ks.
Yeah.
So I think Ted was probably not your villain on this one, but there was a whole...
No, I knew he wasn't. I remember the debate, and I don't remember him being... But it just sounded like the kind of thing that he would like.
Well, you know, listen, there is some truth. You ought to look outside right now. He's probably out popping your hubcaps while
you're
speaking.
I want to go back to something you offered me off the air. You think that maybe you could get him to be on my show?
Well, I do know him fairly well, and actually, some of his staff have worked for me after they've departed from him, and so I do know him well. And
when he joins us on the show, I will admit to him. Now, I won't apologize, but I will admit to him that I have called him the archenemy of small business. I will tell him that. I'll be honest about it.
I suspect in my run up to this discussion with him, I'm going to mention that you aren't forming a new fan club.
But that he will be treated with absolute respect and deference, and as all my guests are, including you, as you know.
Jim, I will tell you that you are a gentleman of the truest sense, and I would expect nothing less. And that is one of the reasons I will call and ask if he'd like to go into the Lions Den.
He'll be treated well, but we'll also have a good debate.
And I
suspect that he's the kind of guy who likes that sort of thing.
He does not shrink from debate, has been my general feeling over the years, yes.
Hey, that would be great. Work that out for us, Bill.
I will do that. I'll give you a call.
Hey, Bill, thank you for giving us a heads up on how Sarbanes-Oxley is going to affect small business owners. Folks, keep your heads up on this. This is something you're going to see creeping into your life. Pay attention to it. You may need some help with this. You may need some counsel from somebody on how to handle this. Don't just go into it blindly. Thanks, Bill. Good job.
Thank you, Jim.
Bill Brandt, ladies and gentlemen, with Development Specialists Incorporated. That's DSI.biz. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.